American National Insurance Company and American Life Insurance Company of Texas from Travis County and the 3rd Court of Appeals District. Justice Heck is not sitting in that case. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side for each of these arguments, and we will take a brief recess between them. These proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the arguments should be available on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court's ready to hear argument in the first cause, 10-03-21, Texas Department of Public Safety versus Caruana.
May it please the court, Mr. Gibbons will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. We're asked today to decide whether it is reasonable to admit an unsworn officer's report under Rule 8038 in the absence of any statutory or administrative language prohibiting its admissibility. Because there is no statutory or administrative language prohibiting the admissibility of the unsworn peace officer's report, the report is admissible under Rule 8038. The rule 8038 permits the admissibility of matters observed pursuant to a duty imposed by law or factual findings resulting from an investigation made pursuant to an authority granted by law.
May I ask you a question, please?
Yes.
Under that rule, the duty is to report a sworn statement, correct? So would it really apply?
Absolutely it does, because the officer has a duty to make a report. Whether or not the report is sworn is incidental to the duty to file the report.
So are you saying there's a duty in addition to the duty created under the Administrative Code 159?
There is. There is a duty in addition to what's under 159. There's the officer also, as I pointed out, I think in our brief to the court, that in certain cases, officers are also required to file reports detailing any stop that they make for purposes of racial classifications or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Also, the officer may have a duty within his police department to file a report on any stop that he makes.
So your position would be an unsworn report is admissible whether or not the officer is present to testify.
The position of the department is that's not correct if the officer has been subpoenaed. If the officer has been subpoenaed to appear and he does not appear, then the unsworn report is not admissible.
But if the officer has not been subpoenaed to appear, then the unsworn report is admissible.
That's correct.
What's the purpose of swearing? What's the purpose for a sworn oath?
The purpose for having a sworn report, the Court of Criminal Appeals in State v. Smith, which is a case that's 207 Southwest 3rd, 787, talks about the purpose of an oath. And the purpose of an oath is to bring into mind of the person who's making the report and of the person who's reading the report the seriousness of the report.
So it's to impress upon the person who is testifying that what facts that he or she is relating is are presented under penalty of punishment or perjury. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
So if an unsworn report is admissible, what incentive does the officer have to be truthful about the facts that he or she is reporting?
Well, as it turns out, in Texas, whether or not the report is actually sworn to doesn't make a difference as to whether or not it's punishable by criminal sanctions. If the officer files a false report, even though that report is not sworn, that report is still, that peace officer files a false report, the peace officer is still subject to criminal sanctions. And so even though he doesn't swear to the report, he can still be subject to criminal sanctions. And so the report maintains its indicia of truthfulness and reliability. And that's one of the important things to remember.
But the Court of Appeals was worried that if you read the rule, the administrative rule, to refer to sworn reports, then you can't exclude it if the officer doesn't appear. And that's not the department's position.
That's not the department's position, no. I think there's a, the State Office of Administrative Hearings, I believe there's evidence that they have read the word sworn report to be a term of art that includes any report, whether it is sworn or not. If you look at the Texas Register, the State Office of Administrative Hearings has pointed out that the legislature has basically defined what a sworn report is. It is a report that identifies the person who's arrested. It provides the basis for the reason why they're arrested. It provides the analysis of the specimen, and it provides a copy of the criminal complaint if one has been filed. So basically, the legislature has come down with a definition of what a sworn report is, and the State Office of Administrative Hearings has acknowledged that there is a term of art created by that legislative definition of what a sworn report is.
Do the criminal sanctions that attach support or buttress this notion that even though it's not sworn, it is as if it was sworn, because the failure to be truthful carries with it such a severe penalty on the
Absolutely.
Criminal side?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why does Chapter 524 require a sworn report and Chapter 724 doesn't? Or vice versa, whichever one it is,
I am sure that the legislature had a reason for doing that, but I do not know what it is.
They were enacted at very different periods of time, right?
They were enacted at different periods of time. And
one came a whole lot earlier than the other one.
Pardon?
One came a whole lot earlier than the
That's
other
correct. One. That's correct.
But there's no indication why. You don't think it has to do with the contents of the report?
I don't think it has to do with contents of the report. I think it has to do with, again, the legislature wanting to impress upon the officer and to impress upon the administrative court the seriousness of the report.
The rule of evidence, Rule 803, has another component to it, which is there's an exception if the sources of information or other circumstances indicate a lack of trustworthiness. Do you think the administrative law judge has the discretion to exclude the report?
I think the administrative law judge has the discretion to exclude the report if there is evidence that the report is untrustworthy. Now,
is the officer's failure to follow the law an indication that it's untrustworthy?
I don't think so, not in this case anyway.
In this case, the judge admitted it. But
that's correct.
If the judge had excluded it, it might be within the judge's discretion, and could the judge take into consideration the fact that it was unsworn?
That's a possibility, I think.
Well, we know that the law provides for a sworn oath and requires the officer to sign it. Wouldn't it be an easier rule of law for us to say that's the law, period? And if you want it to be admissible, then officers need to comply with their obligations under the law. And if they don't, then it's not. What's wrong with that, taking that bright line approach?
Well, the problem with that is that Rule 159.23(c)(7) applies both in ALR cases that are failure cases and refusal cases. And if you say that the rule applies that way in refusal cases, then in refusal cases, the statute does not even require the officer to file a sworn report. So in all of those cases where an officer is not required to file a sworn report, the reading of the rule in that manner would exclude the officer's report in those cases. And I think that's clearly not what either the legislature or the State Office of Administrative Hearings intended.
But 724 in refusal cases does not require a sworn report, just a written report.
That's correct.
There's different language, as Justice Heck pointed out, in 724 versus 524.
That's correct. But Rule 159.23(c)(7) applies to both failure cases and refusal cases. So if you say that 159.23(c)(7) controls and it requires a sworn report, even though the statute 724 does not require a sworn report, then you've created a conflict between the rule and the statute. And it's not necessary to create that conflict.
Why would an officer not sign the report? The officer prepared the report, completed the report, and at the bottom it takes 5 seconds to sign it, right?
He did sign the report, Your Honor. He did sign the report. He took it in and had it notarized, but he did not raise his hand and swear that everything in there was true and correct. So that's the problem in this particular case. And that's one of the things that I wanted to point out to the court, is that the officer in this case, and he also came to the administrative hearing and testified that everything in his report was true and correct. So there's nothing in here that would disparage the credibility of the report or the contents of the report. This is merely a procedural matter as to whether or not the officer had the report sworn to.
Do you know why there wasn't more testimony as to the substance of what went on, rather than just testifying that what was in the report was correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Once the report was offered and admitted into evidence, having the officer testify to everything that was in the report would have been a waste of the court's time, would have been a waste of the officer's time, would have been a waste of time for both counsel. So,
do you know if that was attempted?
Whether or not what was attempted?
To get into the substance.
There was no attempt to elicit the substance of the report.
Not a bad policy from a belt and suspenders approach, though, is it?
That's true.
Well, and how important is it, though, for a police officer to have reports that are thorough, given that they may arrest 40 people a month and have these hearings come up 2 years later? How important is that report, and would they really be able to recall?
That's correct. The report, it's important that the officer file a report quickly after the arrest. And although even in that sense, even though the statute requires that the officer file a report within 5 days, that directory, that provision has been held to be directory. And like the provision just shortly afterward that the officer file a sworn report, the statute does not prevent it from, does not provide any sanctions if the officer doesn't file the report within 5 days. And the statute doesn't provide any sanctions if the officer doesn't file a sworn report. And there's no reason to treat one of those requirements differently than the other. They're both in the same exact statute, the same exact provision. And so that's why the court should not consider the directive to file a sworn report to be controlling in this case. Aside from that, the 524.011 doesn't actually address the admissibility of a report at all. If you look further along in the transportation code, 524.038 does address admissibility of some affidavits, and 524.039 discusses when those affidavits are not admissible. So the legislature clearly knew how to make an affidavit admissible and how to make it inadmissible, and they demonstrated that ability. But when you were talking about the peace officer's report, they chose not to address that situation at all. And so what we have there is the legislature looking to the common law, which is to say that this report would be admissible, and saying that that's what they intend. Because if they wanted to make a report, a peace officer's report, admissible, they knew how to do that, and they would have written the statute that way. They chose not to.
You said earlier that there is a criminal penalty for making a false statement in a report that is not sworn.
Yes.
Is that different from the criminal penalty that applies for making a sworn false statement in a court of law?
In other
words,
so.
In one instance, are there two criminal penalties, and in the other instance, one?
Under 3702, which is the perjury statute, that's a Class A misdemeanor, and under 37.10, which I believe is the making the false entry in a government report, that's also a Class A misdemeanor. So the penalties are the same either way.
SOA knew about this problem before 2008 when they changed the rules, or not?
I think SOA certainly has known that there has been a conflict about whether or not these reports are admissible under 8038 for quite some time. That's been one of the fights all along, is whether or not the reports are admissible under Rule 8038. But SOA has pointed out in the Texas Register that the courts have addressed this issue, and they've made no change in their administrative rules in that respect. the fact that SOA has specifically addressed this issue twice in the Texas Register, I think, is certainly something that is to be considered, because SOA has relied on the courts in this particular instance to, when the courts have said that these reports are admissible as public records, SOA has relied on the courts in that, and I think that it's important that SOA continue to be able to rely on the courts and to be able to rely on the fact that they're admissible as public records.
Is there any difference between this case and the Casper case? Are you familiar with that?
I am familiar with the Casper case.
Is the legal issue exactly the same?
The legal issue, as far as the admissibility of the record of the report, is very similar, if not the same. The only difference is that in this case, the officer actually testified on the stand that everything in his report was true and correct. In the Casper case, the officer was not actually called to testify in that case, and so the report was admitted without any testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
Thank you. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Brian Baker. I have the pleasure of representing Stephen Caruana in this matter. The first question that I heard from you all was, isn't there a duty created by law to make a sworn report? That is really the most important part about this case. If you look at the Texas Transportation Code in Chapter 524, which applies to breath test failure cases and which applies to this case being a breath test failure case, it says the officer must submit a sworn report. That is the form of the public record that the officer has a duty to create. And under 803.8b, we see that's matters observed pursuant to a duty imposed by law, that being the transportation code, to which matters as there was a duty to report.
Let me ask you, if the report is independently admissible as a public record, then what language are you referring to that says that an unsworn report is not admissible? In other words, if the dissent talks about this being a rule of an inclusion, not exclusion, and so could you please
talk about that? The duty is created by the statute, 524.011, that it must be a sworn report.
But that's talking about inclusion. It's not saying that an unsworn report is not admissible.
True. If you cannot find in the statutes a concise statement that says an unsworn report is not admissible.
Right.
Okay. What you have to do is look at, is there a duty created to create this report? And there is. Undoubtedly, it's in 524.011.
In the dissent, the 14th Court discusses the 14th Court of Appeals case, Cortinas, where there was an error in timing. It wasn't filed within the 5 days, and that did not preclude admission. What is the difference between the error in form and the error in timing? Why should we treat those differently?
In that case, and in other cases where they said, well, the officer didn't submit it within 5 days. That's not the essence of the thing to be done. Or years ago, people would object, hey, we didn't get an ALR hearing within 40 days. That's different.
But it's not the essence, but timing is critical because memory lapses. If you don't write it down within 5 days, then you can understand why the trustworthiness or the credibility of that report might be as impacted as it would be if it wasn't sworn to, following your line of reasoning. So tell me why we should treat it differently.
Well, because the report is the essence of the thing to be done. I think that the legislature requires a sworn report because we're going to take away a person's driver's license based on the information that's provided by the officer. We're not going to live in a hyper-technical world where we're going to cut someone loose that when the officer didn't turn it in within 5 days.
Okay, but if he turned it in 6 months later and swore that he remembered precisely what happened that day, here are the facts, is that really any different in terms of trustworthiness and the circumstances of creation is, I guess, what we're looking at. How's that different?
Well, you know, it may not be. In the day and age of my cases, everything is video recorded, and the officer could probably watch a video and rewrite a report, and he may have the benefit of doing that. And it's, you know, many years ago, I'm sure that if they didn't write it down and 6 months later they tried to generate a report, they'd have a heck of a difficult time doing that. Now I think it's different.
So that wouldn't require exclusion, but even though we have a videotape and a report, and he signed it, that requires exclusion. Tell me why. What's the policy rationale that dictates that result?
I think the legislature required a sworn report because we're going to take someone's license away based on the facts of the case. Well, and I think that is the important part.
Couldn't the officer just have testified without a report?
He could have testified without a report, and he should have testified without a report. And that would be entirely acceptable because that testimony would have been sworn. And we could have avoided this appeal.
What if he simply took notes at the scene, kept them in a drawer at the house, and brought those when he came to testify? And he said, you know, here are my notes, and everything I remember is in these notes. And the state says we offered Exhibit 1, and they're admitted.
I would have objected because it wasn't a sworn report as required by the legislature.
But he didn't even offer it as a report or a sworn report. It's just his notes.
I don't think there's a provision for the admission of that law, and that's something that
is there anything to exclude that? Can you point to a rule of evidence excluding that should have been excluded?
It's not a public record. There's no exception to that document being admissible as an exception to the hearsay rule.
What about a doctor who brings in his or her notes from treating a patient, says, here are my notes, and they tell how I treated the patient minute by minute, hour by hour, and everything in there is correct, and offer those as an exhibit, and the court admits it. Is there something to exclude that document from evidence?
Well, I don't know that is going to fit in with the ALR rules that we already have, which SOA has rules as well as the department's rules and the transportation code rules. So I think that would be a little different in that instance.
What significance should we attach to the SOA comments in the register?
Well, I think you should attach a lot to the SOA rule. Here's the argument. When I started out, I did want to make the point that there's a duty created by law under the statute to submit a sworn report, and it's explicit in a failure case. There is a duty created by the department to submit these reports, submit sworn reports in the case of a failure, a breath test refusal, or a minor detectable amount, okay? And it is even more explicit in the case of a failure in their rules. If you look at 17.4, I believe it's 2, they have like an extra statement. You gotta make sure this is sworn, officers. So if you look at those two rules, you see the report, form of the report must be sworn. And if you look at, and you tie that into Rule 8038, the duty requirement must be there. That's where the duty is created, and that's what makes it admissible. My argument here is that SOA looked at this all the statutes, all the rules, and they made up their own rule. And they said a peace officer's sworn report of relevant information, no matter what the form, they didn't say an offense report, a narrative report, or something like that. They say a report of relevant information. In other words, that to me would seem to suggest that anything the officer generates or
you don't think so as comment. You don't think so as comments are some indication that they intend for unsworn reports to be admissible under the rules of evidence?
I do not think that's the way you interpret the rules. Absolutely not. Here's why. There's an unambiguous statement that says a peace officer's sworn report is admissible as a public record, period. It is not designed to exclude the officer's report if he doesn't testify. That's not the sole purpose of the rule. And that's what the department would have you believe. That's not correct. What SOA did is said the form of the report is specified by law, and that's what's admissible as a public record. What it does is it makes an unsworn report, a report that does not comply with the statutory duties, it makes it inadmissible.
In 724 cases too?
Yes. Here's
so
why.
You disagree with Pruitt.
I disagree with Pruitt, and I would like to address that in a moment. I really would like to discuss that with Pruitt, but let me answer your question first. SOA's rule And people will say, well, how can it be different in a refusal of failure? Does that even make sense? Why would we require some more convincing proof in a failure in a refusal case? That's a head scratcher for me and all of my colleagues that do what I do. I think SOA came up with this rule because it is duty bound to require no less than a sworn report in a failure case. In other words, they couldn't say in a failure case, unsworn reports are okay, because they're limited only to sworn reports. What SOA can do is say, we do require a sworn report in a refusal case because it's not excluded by the statute in 724. 724 doesn't say, you know, any report will do. They just say submit a written report. And the detail that you see in 724, it's there's much less than there is in 524. And you ask the question, what's up with the legislature? Why did they do that? No one here knows. I think it was just an aberration. But I think SOA is free to make a rule that says all these reports must be sworn to be admissible as public records, and that's not inconsistent with 724.032. Also, if you look at 724.032 and 724.031, and you read the statute, it's kind of a weird statute. It says a refusal report, and it doesn't really seem to jive with the description that you get in 524.011b4 about, you know, explain the reasons for this person's license suspension. And so when you look at the SOA rule, I think that you can reasonably conclude that SOA interpreted this rule to require sworn reports in any case, because you couldn't say that SOA would find it reasonable to write a rule that unsworn reports are okay when the legislature says they gotta be sworn in failure cases. So that's the one point I wanted to make to answer your question about the comments. We're going to disagree about what the comments say until the cows come home. There's going to be no agreement to that, and that's why we're here. If you look at the previous rules and the comments, they've always required a sworn report or probable cause affidavit, and that's a theme that you've seen throughout this case. If you look at the comments, we have one person that said Rule 159.23c7. Which governs the admissibility of a sworn report. They said, the commenter said, that violates the person's right to confront the witness. We disagree as to, is that a sidebar from SOA? Or is that what the commenter said? I think if you read the comments, the commenter didn't say, SOA 159.23c7, which governs the admissibility of sworn reports, violates our right to confront the witnesses against you. They said 159.23c7 violates our right to confront the witness if he doesn't appear. So a sidebar that says this governs the admission of the documents. If you look at some of the cases cited in the briefs, in Walter, Manley, Gratzer, Samuels, Wickham, and Struve, those five cases all credit 159.23c6, which is the predecessor to C7 or C7, as the way that these reports get admitted. They say that's how it's admitted. And you may look back at some other cases, kind of a string cite in both of our briefs, that say 159, or they credit 8038 for the rule. They say, no, these sworn reports are admissible under 8038. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think if they're in the form that they are required, then they are admissible under 8038. But if they're not in that form, then they're not admissible. And so that's why you don't see a case that says an unsworn report is admissible under 8038, except for Pruitt.
I want you to get to Pruitt, then I'll ask a question. Sorry.
8038. Let's talk about Pruitt. Why am I critical of Pruitt? Why are my colleagues critical of Pruitt? Well, because bad lawyers make bad law. The proper objection in Pruitt would have been to raise a SOA 159.23C6 or C7 objection. That objection was never made in that case. The attorney said, objection hearsay. If you assume what I say is right, that is not enough. If you follow what the legislature says, say you all say, I don't know why the legislature did what they did, but we got to follow. Because they made it clear in a case of a refusal, it doesn't have to be sworn. In a case of a failure, it does. And we just got to go with what they said because that's our duty. May not agree with it, but that's your duty. If that's the case, then that unsworn report was in the form required by law. Correct? Refusal case, not sworn, didn't have to be sworn. It was in the form required by law and admissible under 8038. Right?
because there was no objection made under 159.23c7. If there was, maybe the San Antonio Court of Appeals would have heard an argument like mine.
Well, then, but your bottom line is you can't get the report in a 724 case.
My bottom line is let's look at the SOA rule. And well, I think SOA...
Is that true? You can't get it in a 724 case.
An unsworn report?
Yes.
That's my opinion, yes. I think you look at the SOA rule, but even if you didn't, even
so
if you
the only
said,
way,
I don't believe it.
The only way to get any substantive testimony is to use the report to refresh the officer's recollection or hope that he's got some independent recollection. That's all you can do in a 724 case, in your view.
Fair enough. I mean, if it's unsworn, have the officer come and testify, or he can refresh his recollection, because there was nothing prohibiting the Department of Public Safety from eliciting that information. And they said, we didn't want to waste the time. They didn't want to waste my time. I've been through a couple of appellate courts when they could have just asked about 10 questions. And
counsel, why is Chapter 724's written reports, why are they not public records?
724 written reports?
That are not sworn.
If you look at them under the analysis that they don't have to be, then I think they are public records. In a refusal case, like I said, in Pruitt, if you say, I don't believe the SOA rule, but you say, I will follow 803.8, and I will look to the duty created by law.
I don't know that you have an option. In
okay.
a court of law, the rules of evidence govern.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a public report under Chapter 724, whether it's sworn or unsworn, then 803.8 will govern whether it's admissible, correct? Absent some legislative indication to the contrary.
My argument would be 159.23c7 should bar the admission of an unsworn report. I think so is
so the administrative provision trumps the rule of evidence in that case, in your view.
I think that the SOA rule was reasonable as a reasonable construction of the case. And I think it's unreasonable to construe one has to be sworn and one doesn't.
Okay, let me make sure I understand. I'm just going to presume from your demeanor and statements that you don't have a question about the veracity of the officers or their integrity across the board generally trying to do their job to protect the public. Your question is whether the technical requirements of the statute and the regs have been complied with in admitting a specific document.
With respect, sir, I question the veracity of police officers and the statements that they make every week in court. And so I don't take as a document saying that it's sworn or sworn to and subscribed before me, or that it has a title that says police officer sworn report. I don't accept that. And in this case, I think when you look at it and you see that this officer has essentially faked a document, and maybe it wasn't intentional, it was at least negligent, and he'd been caught doing it before, I have a problem with that. Because when you start to cheat a little bit, or you start to fake it just a little bit, you kind of go down a slippery slope.
So you're saying,
it gets to the point of but it gets to the question that we explored earlier, and that is, what is the purpose of the oath? Is it to impress on the person testifying that what I'm about to swear to, if it is inaccurate, might subject me to criminal penalties, and so I better be accurate about it?
Absolutely.
And if that's the case, then why is the department's argument that there are sanctions whether or not the document is sworn, criminal sanctions that can attach for inaccurate testimony, enough to decide the case?
Well, because I think those criminal sanctions are really, they're an illusion. And it doesn't matter whether it's tampering with a government document, and it doesn't matter whether it's perjury. Nothing has happened in this case because the officer submitted a document that was not truly sworn. I mean, I have a problem as a lawyer offering a piece of evidence that I would act as if it was a sworn document, and it wasn't. And if I did that, I would think that someone would take my bar card away.
But documents that are unsworn are admitted properly every day in a court of law. A contract between parties and a breach of contract action. many documents, a letter written in an attorney's fee case. Many documents are properly admitted that are not sworn in courts of law every day, criminal and civil. Chapter 724 reports don't have to be sworn. Now, your answer previously surprised me. I start with a strong presumption that these officers are acting with veracity and integrity. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to in our system, just as we start with the presumption that attorneys are acting with veracity and that the courts are acting with respect and veracity. And then if there's an exception, we deal with it here. I guess I go back to Justice Guzman's question about what's the policy reason to exclude this document if there's no indications of untrustworthiness. If you've got some evidence that shows that, then you could bring that before a judge to mm-hmm. be considered. But what's the general policy reason? Because it almost seems as the dissent in the Court of Appeals raised that we're looking for technical, I think maybe the dissent said hyper-technical reasons to exclude something. So what's the policy reason here?
I think that a Texas driver deserves nothing less than a sworn statement of the facts that are going to use to take away his privilege to operate a motor vehicle.
Well, what about a death penalty defendant? Why would they be entitled to the same thing?
Everyone should be entitled to as much.
But the fact of the matter is, every day in courts, in capital murder cases, mm-hmm. documents are admitted into evidence that are not sworn and are perfectly relevant and probative evidence.
Well, there's certainly some rules that prohibit all documents being admitted into evidence, and it's not just like, you know, everything comes in. I mean, these things have to be sworn, and I think a Texas driver deserves nothing less than having that sworn report submitted into evidence. And you do have the indication of trustworthiness. When I asked the police officer, I said, you know, this document purports that you said that it was sworn. And they said, I didn't, that never happened. And to me, you know, I've got a problem. We should have a bright line rule, like Justice Jefferson suggested. It's swear to the report, submit it to DPS, and let's go have a hearing. What's wrong with that? The problem is that now we have officers, based on Government Code 602.002 Part 16, they're just swearing to anything. And that's not the case. And I mean, I've done enough of these hearings, and I'm sure my colleagues have too, where you discover things that are in reports, and they're just not true. And they ought to be sworn. And I don't think that we presume regularity or that things are exactly as they purport to be, you know, 99% of the time. And so for that reason, I think that 8038 says this is the duty. You have to follow what the legislature said. If it's not in that form that it's required by the Transportation Code or the department's rules, which all unquestionably require sworn reports, then it's not admissible under 8038. And for that reason, I think that the ALJ erred in admitting that document into evidence. And but for the admission of that document, there's no evidence that there was reasonable suspicion to stop Mr. Caruana, no evidence that there's probable cause to arrest him. And the subsequent swearing to, after it was already admitted, is just too late.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Court will hear rebuttal.
May it please the court. There's one point that I wanted to address right off the bat. Counsel said that it's important that we have sworn reports because we're going to take away someone's license. But in the majority of cases, we take away a person's license without a sworn report. The majority of cases are refusal cases. And a sworn report is not required in those cases. And we take away a person's driver's license every day based on a report in 724 that does not have to be sworn. That's why having a sworn report does not go to the essence of the thing to be done. The essence of the thing to be done is to inform the department that a person's license should be suspended. That's why the report requires that the officer notify the department of the person's name, of the grounds for the arrest, of the results of the test, and whether or not there was a criminal complaint filed. Those are the elements.
Is an indication in a report that I have sworn to it, taken the oath when I have not, subject to criminal sanction under the penal code provision you mentioned earlier?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Okay, so I sign a document that says at the top, I swore to this document. I raised my hand and took the oath, and I signed it, yes, I did. And then a lawyer asked me, did you actually swear to it? I said, no, I did not. I'm asking, is that a false public official report subject to criminal sanction?
No, it's not, because the question is whether or not there's anything substantive that's false. That's what the issue on 37.10 is whether or not there's any substantive thing in the report that's false. Whether the officer and the officer in by signing the report does affirm that everything in there is true and correct. It's just a question of whether or not the jurat was
properly
applied.
Well, we're trying to understand. I mean, there are statutes and rules that require swearing. No question about it.
Absolutely.
That require that. And we're looking at comparing that rule of law with conduct that is inconsistent with it. And you said a moment ago that there are ways in that would subject somebody who signs one of these documents, maybe not to perjury, but at least to some other form of criminal sanction. And now we're supposed to look at whether it's substantive or not, or I mean, how do you make that determination?
The penal code is very specific about that. It's 37.10, and that's how you make that determination. And if you look through 37.10, it explains what is filing a false report and what is not. And it depends, again, as I said, on the substantive, whether or not the substantive, if the officer makes a substantive misrepresentation in that report, that's what makes it a criminal violation. Again, the question of whether or not the officer actually raises his hand and swears to a document is a procedural issue. It's not a substantive. The report itself, what's contained within the report, the facts of the case, that's what we're concerned about. And the fact that you can always go back and clean up the swearing part is the part that makes that not an issue. As I stated, in this particular case, the officer, while testifying, swore that everything in his report was true and correct. He was under oath at that point in time. So
it's bound to give a judge some pause that if the law is not being complied with, in one respect, maybe it's not being complied with at all.
Certainly, it may give the judge cause to question the credibility of the officer. But in this case, there were no other questions raised about the credibility of the officer. And so I think the ALJ was within his discretion to credit the officer's credibility. Again, he came and appeared. And that's really the function of the rule. Again, the function of the rule, when read as a whole, is to make sure that if the officer is subpoenaed, he does appear and he is subject to cross-examination. And the officer was subject to cross-examination. He was present at the hearing.
But in many of these cases, the defendant will not be represented by counsel, won't know to subpoena an officer, won't know the procedures, and so might be convicted based on a report that is not sworn according to law because the officer is not present or hasn't been asked to be present.
Well, again, the fact that it's not sworn is not the important part, because the essence of the thing to be done, that's not the essence of the thing to be done. And the important thing, the report that's required from the department in many cases, in all 724 cases, is not required to be a sworn report. So there's still an indicia of reliability attached to this report, whether or not it's sworn or not.
Is there any downside to never swearing to these reports?
The downside is that the ALJ may not give them credit. He may weigh that against the officer.
If we rule as you're arguing, can officers from here henceforward just not swear to the report, sign them but not swear to them? And what's the downside?
The downside to that is, again, that the ALJ may determine that they're not trustworthy, and especially if the...
Under the 8038 exception.
Under the 8038 exception.
Anything else?
I think that's probably...
Does the department policy make it required that these be sworn?
The department's policy does require that they swear to their
reports. And what's the penalty, or what's the consequence at all to the officer for not complying with department policy?
I'm sure there are probably, each agency would probably have their own internal policies for not complying with their own policies. And so I'm sure every agency has a policy that requires their officers to comply with the law in filing their reports. And so each agency would then be responsible for administering any punishments if an officer did not file a report properly.
There are any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Givens. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.